Lecture 1. The diversity, according to law, of the manifestations of human individuality. Last read at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York, January 1924. The investigations of many scientists of past ages, and also the data obtained at the present time by means of the quite exceptionally conducted research of the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man, according to the system of G.I. Gurdjieff, have shown that the whole individuality of every man, according to higher laws and the conditions of the process of human life, established from the very beginning and gradually fixed on earth, of whatever heredity he is the result, and in whatever accidental conditions he arose and developed, must from the beginning of his responsible life, in order to respond to the sense and predestination of his existence as a man and not merely as an animal, indispensably consist of four definite and distinct personalities. The first of these four independent personalities is nothing other than the totality of the automatic functioning proper to man as to all animals, the data for which are composed on the one hand of the sum total of the results of impressions perceived since birth from all the surrounding reality, as well as from everything intentionally implanted in him from outside, and on the other hand, of the result of the process also inherent in every animal called daydreaming. And this totality of automatic functioning most people ignorantly call consciousness, or at best, thinking. The second of the four personalities, functioning in most cases entirely independently of the first, is the sum of the results of data deposited and fixed in the common presence of every man, as of every animal, through the six organs called receivers of vibrations of different qualities, organs that function in accordance with the new impressions perceived, and whose sensitivity depends upon heredity and upon the conditions of the preparatory formation for responsible existence of the given individual. The third independent part of the whole being is the basic functioning of his organism, as well as the play of the motor reflex manifestations acting upon each other within that functioning. Manifestations whose quality likewise depends on heredity and the circumstances prevailing during his preparatory formation. And the fourth personality, which should also be a distinct part of the whole individual, is none other than the manifestation of the totality of the results of the already automatized functioning of the three enumerated personalities separately formed and independently educated in him. That is to say, it is that part of a being which is called I. In the common presence of a man, for the spiritualization and manifestation of each of the three separately formed parts of his entire whole, there is an independent center of gravity localization, as it is called. That is to say, a brain. And each of these localizations, with its own complete system, has, for the totality of its manifestations, its own peculiarities and predispositions proper to it alone. Consequently, in order to make possible the all-round perfecting of a man, a corresponding correct education is absolutely indispensable for each of these three parts, and not such a treatment as is given nowadays under the name of education. Only then can the eye that should be in a man be his own eye? According to the serious experiments and investigations already mentioned, which were carried on over many years, or even simply according to the sane and impartial reflection of any contemporary man, the common presence of every man, particularly of one who for some reason claims to be not just an ordinary average man, but one of the intelligentsia in the genuine sense of the word, should consist of all four of these distinct and quite definite personalities, and each of them should be developed in a corresponding way, so that during his responsible existence, the manifestations of these separate parts will harmonize with one another. To illustrate more clearly the diversity of origin and nature of the personalities mentioned in the general organization of a man, and also to underline the difference between the I that should be in the common presence of a man without quotation marks, that is, a real man, and the pseudo-I that people today mistake for it, one can very well make use of an analogy which, though worn threadbare by spiritualists, occultists, theosophists, and other contemporary specialists in catching fish in muddy waters, with their prattle about the astral body, the mental body, and other such bodies that are supposed to exist in man, can nevertheless throw light on the question we are now considering. A man as a whole, with all his distinct and separately functioning localizations, that is to say, his independently formed and educated personalities, is almost exactly comparable to that equipage for transporting a passenger, which consists of a carriage, a horse, and a coachman. It must be remarked, to begin with, that the difference between a real man and a pseudo-man, that is, between a man who has his own eye and one who has not, is indicated in this analogy by the passenger sitting in the carriage. In the first case, that of the real man, the passenger is the owner of the carriage. And in the second case, he is merely the first chance passerby, who, like the fare in a hackney carriage, is continually changing. The body of a man, with all its motor reflex manifestations, corresponds simply to the carriage itself. All the functionings and manifestations of feeling in a man correspond to the horse harnessed to the carriage and drawing it. The coachman sitting on the box and directing the horse corresponds to what in a man people usually call consciousness or thought. And finally, the passenger sitting in the carriage and giving orders to the coachman is what is called I. The fundamental evil among contemporary people is that owing to the rooted and widespread abnormal methods of education of the rising generation, this fourth personality, which should be present in everybody on reaching responsible age, is entirely lacking in them. And almost all of them consist only of three of the enumerated parts, which, moreover, are formed arbitrarily of themselves and anyhow. In other words, almost every contemporary man of responsible age consists of neither more nor less than a hackney carriage, and what is more, a broken-down carriage that has long ago seen its day, a crock of a horse, and on the box, a tatterdemalion, half-asleep, half-drunk coachman, whose time, designated by Mother Nature for self-perfection, passes in fantastic daydreams while he waits on a corner for any old chance passenger. The first one who happens along hires him and dismisses him just as he pleases. And not only him, but also all the parts subordinate to him. Pursuing this analogy between a typical contemporary man with his thoughts, feelings, and body, and a hackney carriage with its horse and coachman, we can clearly see that in each of the parts composing these two organizations, there must have been formed and must exist its own separate needs, habits, tastes, and so on, proper to it alone. Because according to the different nature of their origin and the diverse conditions of their formation, and also the varying possibilities put into them, there must inevitably have been formed in each of these parts its own psyche, its own notions, its own subjective supports, its own viewpoints, and so on. The whole sum of the manifestations of human thought, with all the inherences proper to its functioning, and with all its specific characteristics, corresponds in almost every respect to the essence and manifestations of a typical hired coachman. Like all hired coachmen in general, he is a certain type called cabbie. He is not entirely illiterate, because owing to the laws existing in his country for the general compulsory teaching of the three R's, he was obliged in his childhood to put in an occasional appearance at what is called the parish school. Although he himself is a country boy and has remained as ignorant as his fellow rustics, yet rubbing shoulders, thanks to his profession, with people of various positions and education, and picking up from them, a bit here and a bit there, a lot of expressions for various notions, he has now come to look down with contempt about everything smacking of the country, indignantly dismissing it all as ignorance. In short, this is a type to whom one could apply perfectly the adage, too good for the crows, but the peacocks won't have him. He considers himself competent even in questions of religion, politics, and sociology. With his equals, he likes to argue. Those whom he regards as his inferiors, he likes to teach. With his superiors, he is a servile flatterer. He stands before them, as is said, cap in hand. One of his greatest weaknesses is dangling after the neighborhood cooks and housemaids. But best of all, he likes to put away a good square meal and to gulp down another glass or two, and then, fully satiated, drowsily to daydream. To gratify these weaknesses of his, he regularly steals part of the money his employer gives him to buy fodder for the horse. Like every cabbie, he works only under the lash, and if occasionally he does a job without being made to, it is always in the hope of a tip. The desire for tips has gradually taught him to detect certain weaknesses in the people he deals with and to take advantage of them. He has automatically learned to be cunning, to flatter, to stroke people the right way, as they say, and in general, to lie. On every convenient occasion when he has a free moment, he slips into a saloon or a bar where over a glass of beer, he daydreams for hours at a time, or talks with a type like himself, or just reads the paper. He tries to look imposing, wears a beard, and if he is thin, pads himself out to appear more important. As regards the feeling localization in a man, the totality of its manifestations and the whole system of its functioning correspond perfectly to the horse of the hackney carriage in our analogy. Incidentally, this comparison of the horse with the composition of human feeling will help to show particularly clearly the error and one-sidedness of the contemporary education inflicted on the rising generation. The horse, owing to the negligence of those around it during its early years and to its constant solitude, is as if locked up within itself. In other words, its inner life is driven inside, and for external manifestations, it has nothing but inertia. Thanks to the abnormal conditions around it, the horse has never received any special education, but has been molded solely under the influence of constant thrashings and vile abuse. It has always been kept tied up, and for food, instead of oats and hay, it has only been given straw, which is utterly worthless for its real needs. Never having seen in any of the manifestations toward it the least love or friendliness, the horse is now ready to surrender itself completely to anybody who gives it the slightest caress. In consequence of all this, the inclinations of the horse, thus deprived of all interests and aspirations, must inevitably concentrate on food, drink, and the automatic yearning for the opposite sex. Hence, it invariably veers in the direction where it can get any of these. And if, for example, it catches sight of a place where even once or twice it gratified one of these needs, it waits for the chance to run off in that direction. It must be added that although the coachman has a very feeble understanding of his duties, he can nevertheless, even though only a little, think logically. And remembering tomorrow, he does occasionally, either from the fear of losing his job or the desire of receiving a reward, show an interest in doing something or other for his employer without being forced to. But the horse, in the absence of a special education adapted to its nature, has not received at the proper time any data at all for manifesting the aspirations requisite for responsible existence. And of course, it fails to understand, indeed, it cannot be expected to understand, why it should do anything. It therefore carries out its obligations with complete indifference and only from fear of further beatings. As for the carriage, which in our analogy stands for the body, considered separately from the other independently formed parts of the common presence of a man, its situation is even worse. The carriage, like most other carriages, is made of various materials, and furthermore is of a very complicated construction. It was designed, as is evident to any sane thinking man, to carry all kinds of loads, and not for the purpose for which it is used by contemporary people, that is, only to carry passengers. The chief cause of the many misunderstandings connected with it springs from the fact that those who invented the system of this carriage intended it for travel on byroads, and therefore certain inner details of its general construction were designed with this in view. For example, the principle of its greasing, which is one of the chief needs of an equipage made of such different materials, was so devised that the grease should spread over all the metal parts from the jolting inevitable on such roads. Whereas now this carriage, designed for traveling on byroads, is usually stationed on a rank in the city and travels on smooth, level, paved streets. In the absence of any shocks whatsoever while rolling along such roads, the greasing of all its parts does not take place uniformly, and consequently some of them are bound to rust and cease to perform the functions intended for them. A carriage goes easily as a rule, if its moving parts are properly greased. With too little grease, these parts get overheated and finally red hot, and thus the other parts get spoiled. However, if there is too much grease on some part, the general functioning of the carriage is impaired, and in either case, it becomes more difficult for the horse to pull it. The contemporary coachman, our cabbie, has no inkling of the need for greasing the carriage, and even if he does grease it, he does so without proper knowledge, only on hearsay, blindly following the directions of the first comer. So, when this carriage, now more or less adapted for travel on smooth roads, has for some reason or other to go along a byroad, something always happens to it. Either a nut gives way, or a bolt gets bent, or something or other gets loose. And so these expeditions rarely end without more or less considerable repairs. In any case, it has become more and more risky to use this carriage for its intended purpose. And once repairs are begun, you have to take the carriage all to pieces, examine all its parts one by one, and, as is always done in such cases, kerosene them, clean them, and then put them together again. And frequently it becomes obvious that you have to change a part immediately and without fail. This is all very well if the part happens to be inexpensive, but it may turn out that the repair is more costly than a new carriage. And so, all that has been said about the separate parts of that vehicle, which taken as a whole constitutes a hackney carriage, is fully applicable to the general organization of the common presence of a man. In view of the lack among contemporary people of any knowledge or ability to prepare the rising generation for responsible existence in an appropriate way, by educating all the separate parts composing their common presence, every person of today is a confused and extremely ludicrous something, which, again using our analogy, presents the following picture. A carriage of the latest model, just out of the factory, varnished by genuine German craftsmen from the town of Barmen, and harnessed to the kind of horse which in the region of Transcaucasia is called Glorzidzi. Zi is a horse. Dglos was the name of a certain Armenian expert in the art of buying and skinning utterly worthless horses. On the box of this stylish carriage sits an unshaven, unkempt, sleepy coachman, dressed in a shabby frock coat, which he has retrieved from the rubbish bin where it had been thrown out as useless by Maggie, the kitchen maid. On his head reposes a brand new top hat, an exact replica of Rockefeller's, and in his buttonhole is displayed a giant chrysanthemum. Contemporary man inevitably presents such a ludicrous picture because from the day of his arising, these three parts formed in him, which, though of diverse origin and having properties of diverse quality, should nevertheless, for pursuing a single aim during his responsible existence, represent together his entire whole, begin, so to say, to live and to become fixed in their specific manifestations separately from one another, never having been trained to give the required automatic reciprocal support and help, or to understand one another even approximately. Thus later, when there is a need for concerted manifestations, these concerted manifestations do not appear. To be sure, thanks to what is called the system of education of the rising generation, completely fixed at the present time in the life of man, and which consists simply and solely in drumming into the pupils by means of constant repetition to the point of stupefaction, numerous almost empty words and expressions, and in training them to recognize merely by the difference in their sounds the reality these words and expressions are supposed to signify, the coachman is still able to explain after a fashion the various desires he feels, though only to types like himself. And he is sometimes even able, at least approximately, to understand others. This coachman cabbie of ours, gossiping with other coachmen while waiting for a fare, and sometimes, as is said, flirting in the doorways with the local maids, even picks up various forms of what is called civility. In accordance with the external conditions of the life of coachmen in general, he also gradually automatizes himself to distinguish one street from another, and for instance, to calculate how, when a street is closed for repairs, to get to the required destination from another direction. But as for the horse, even though the maleficent contemporary invention called education does not extend to its formation, and in consequence, its inherited possibilities are not atrophied, yet because of the fact that it has been formed under the abnormal conditions of the established process of ordinary existence, and that it grows up ignored by everybody like an orphan, and moreover an ill-treated orphan, it neither acquires anything corresponding to the psyche of the coachman, nor learns anything of what he knows, and hence it remains ignorant of the forms of reciprocal relationship which have become habitual for the coachman, and no contact is made between them for understanding each other. It may happen, however, that in its locked-in life, the horse comes to learn some form of relationship with the coachman, and even, perhaps, is not unfamiliar with some sort of language. But the trouble is that the coachman does not know this, or even suspect that such a thing is possible. Apart from the fact that in these abnormal conditions, no data have been formed between the horse and the coachman to allow them to understand each other automatically, even a little, there are many other outer causes, independent of them, which deprive them of the possibility of fulfilling together that single purpose for which they were both destined. Just as the separate independent parts of a hackney carriage are connected, namely the carriage to the horse by the shafts and the horse to the coachman by the reins, so also are the separate parts of the general organization of a man connected with each other. The body is connected to the feeling organization by the blood, and the feeling organization with that of the thought or consciousness by what is called chanbledzoin, namely by that substance which arises in the common presence of a man from all intentionally made being efforts. The deplorable system of education existing at the present time has led to the coachman's ceasing to have any effect whatever on his horse. At best, he can arouse in its consciousness by means of the reins just three ideas, right, left, and stop. Strictly speaking, he cannot always do even this, because the reins are generally made of materials that react to atmospheric phenomena. For example, in a pouring rain, they swell and lengthen, and in heat, the contrary, thus having a varying effect upon the horse's automatized sensitivity of perception. The same thing proceeds in the general organization of the ordinary man, whenever from some impression or other, the density and tempo of the chanbledzoin change in him, so that his thinking loses all possibility of affecting his feeling organization. And so, to sum up everything that has been said, we must willy-nilly acknowledge that every man should strive to have his own eye. Otherwise, he will never represent anything more than a hackney carriage, which any passing fare can sit in and dispose of just as he pleases. Here it will not be superfluous to point out that the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man has among its fundamental tasks the aim, on the one hand, of educating in its pupils each of the independent personalities I spoke of, first separately and then in their reciprocal relationships, according to the needs of their subjective life in the future, and on the other hand, of begetting and fostering in each of its pupils what every bearer of the name of man without quotation marks should have, his own I.